We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio, and I'm Bonnie North. If you were in your teens or early 20s in Milwaukee from, say, the late 70s to the early 80s, you might have heard this band, the Emmodots. The singer's voice was described at the time as sounding like a witch in need of a throat lozenge, which could have also described the music a lot of punk and post-punk bands were making. If the Emmodots weren't your thing, well, perhaps it was the Oil Tasters, or Sacred Order, or In a Hot Coma. As Steve Nodine points out, you had quite a few choices in Milwaukee at the time. Nodine himself was part of the punk and post-punk scene here, mostly in his band Dark Facade, but more recently he's become the scene's historian, compiling the stories in The Cease Is Increase, an oral history of Milwaukee's punk and alternative music scene. Nodine tells us that even though Milwaukee was known at the time for its blues and its rock bands, the punk scene here was just as strong.
There was a base of clubs that supported the music and were a place that people could come to. And I think punk was a lot of misfits, people who didn't fit in school or weren't listening to what everybody else was listening to. And they went to Zach's and they discovered themselves. They could do whatever they wanted. They could wear their hair as crazy as they wanted to, and nobody cared. And, you know, you were cool. And
well, how did it differ from rock and roll in general? Because this is what, the early 70s you're talking about, more or less?
In Milwaukee, I think the club scene came together in the late 70s,
okay,
right up till 1980 when it peaked. You know, we had support of WMSC that came out in 1980, where they would play tons of local music. If you were playing that night, you could go down and say, hey, can we come on the radio? We got a show tonight. And sure, come on in, you know. And you just had that support, some support from like the Journal, the Shepherd Express. So you had the media and these clubs, and it just formed this niche of people that got together to share all this new music.
Were some of those people coming from other genres of music, you know, like the blues bands and that sort of thing that were really popular?
Yeah, and that's why the book starts out with the scene from the late 60s, early 70s, where there's like the coffee houses and all that kind of stuff. And then some of those people that were going to that were young and ended up being part of the punk generation, people like Presley Haskell, who was in the Haskells, of course, who was instrumental in getting punk bands into Zach's. And he was friends with all different people, you know, giving him ideas. And, you know, he had his mentors of people who were already in a blues band or, you know, whatever.
Rock and roll band.
Rock and roll band,
yeah,
or something. And
one of the things that I think is so great, I'm not from here, so I'm looking at all of these scenes from the outside, but Milwaukee is both big enough to support a lot of different kinds of bands, but also small enough where everybody pretty much knows each other.
That's
and
true.
The influencers are kind of, they overlap in an interesting way. And in reading your book, I could see that as you were interviewing all the different folks who are still around.
Right. What happened in the 80s was that there were all these mini genres. Everything kind of splintered off into pop, synth pop, keyboards and drum machines and stuff like that. And bands like that would play at the same clubs where traditional punk bands like De Kreutzen or Sacred Order would play. And you had your power pop bands. That was really big. The Shivers, Color Radio. And we all played in the same places, and all the musicians were friends. And we had a cross of people that went to see all different kinds of music. They just wanted to be part of that energy, I think.
Do you think that's particularly Milwaukee? That the scene was that porous?
From what I know of, like, the L.A. scene or, like, Chicago, there was, in Chicago particularly, you know, there's like, the Effigies and Big Black and bands like that, and they played at the Exit, and they played at this and that. And, like, the Exit was, like, if you weren't hardcore,
you weren't
you didn't
go.
Want to go there.
It was too scary.
Yeah. So it didn't intermingle that much. And maybe there was other places where these other types of bands played at other clubs. But I don't think they mingled like that there. And especially like L.A. had their hardcore punk scene. But they had other stuff going on too. But I don't think they really mixed.
And so did that make the Milwaukee punk sound particular? And can you point to bands, you know, that were all happening at the same time, say in L.A. or London or New York and Milwaukee, and say, well, that's a Milwaukee sound because everybody was sort of feeding off each other?
Yeah, and I think that's true. And I think one of the, like, culminations of that would be, like, the Violent Femmes. The Violent Femmes were a group of people who had been around for a while playing in different bands, doing different kinds of stuff. From Victor DiLorenzo, who was part of Theater X, he really liked jazz. Brian really liked jazz. Those two got together. And the singer was a young kid who wrote all these songs while he was in high school. And he got noticed by some people in town, and they were like, oh, this guy, you got to see him. You know, he opened for somebody fairly big by himself. And next thing you know, it's Violent Femmes, and
there they went.
There they went.
Yeah.
You know.
Did the punk scene evolve in a similar way here as it did, say, in London or New York as a reaction to, like, AOR and sort of the bloated prog rock stuff that people think is being very self-indulgent stuff? Was it the same here?
I think so. And I think while it might not have been as organic as it was in, say, London, but a lot of people here were reading the magazines and knowing, you know, what was going on elsewhere by reading interviews with The Clash. I think pretty much everywhere people were getting sick of, you know, what was happening with radio towards the end of the 70s and the early 80s. And one of the beautiful things about the punk scene, and this was characterized by a lot of the stuff in Milwaukee, was anybody could be in a band. Four guys that had been playing guitars for weeks could get together.
All of weeks, yeah.
You know, get in their basement and start jamming. And if they were into it enough, they got accomplished enough that they could play songs. And they wrote songs. And
what were some of the notable punk bands from Milwaukee that people listening might go, oh, yeah, I went and saw them?
Well, there was Sacred Order. They were pretty big. De Kreutzen, who toured everywhere. They were just on the road constantly. They had a record contract with Touch and Go. They were getting airplay on college radio. They never made it big, but they certainly left their mark. And there's still been interest in them today. They just played a big concert in Europe somewhere.
Now, is there a Milwaukee-specific sound? Like, I'm thinking band makeup, like particular instruments. Did we focus on things that way, or was it pretty much all over the board?
Well, the punk bands were pretty typically bass, guitar, drums, lead singer. Mm-hmm. A lot of the power pop bands had, you know, multiple guitars, keyboardists, organs, and pop.
The famous Hammond B3 sound.
Yeah, yep. Correct. Mm-hmm. So, and then there were bands like Dark Facade that, you know, had a Dave Wolf playing keyboards, who was kind of our own Keith Emerson kind of guy. He was in prog rock bands back in the 70s, and he was really good. And so, yeah, people, you know, using different things. But as far as a Milwaukee sound, I guess if you weren't from here and you listened to a compilation of Milwaukee bands, you might go, oh, yeah, you know, they do have kind of a sound. But
it's hard from inside.
It's hard for me to say what that would be.
That leads me to the format of the book, too, which I find great, because basically it is exactly what the title says it is, an oral history. You interviewed all of these people, both musicians and people who were around, you know, writing about it at the time or just experiencing it at the time. Did you always have that construct in mind when you were going to put the book together, or did it evolve itself?
Well, the way the idea for the book came about was through Facebook. I raised a daughter. I was working, I'm a web developer, been in the corporate world for years, and all of a sudden Facebook came along, and I'm like, oh, look, it's Keith, so-and-so, and we all just started. And then this guy, Mike from Sacred Order, started this page on Facebook where it was a conversation about Lest We Forget, it was called, and they had this concert, Lest We Forget. And it was about, we're getting older and a lot of us have passed away from this or that, and started this whole conversation, and it just organically grew into this, we all reconnected. So I talked to my friend Keith Bramer, who was in De Kreutzen, And he had the idea of the oral history, and he pointed me to a couple books, Just Shoot Me, and we have The Neutron Bomb, about the L.A. scene and about punk in general. And I read those, and while I didn't really follow their format, but I liked the idea of the oral history because it's everybody's voice. It's not just me saying, in 1982, you know, there's stories. And one of the great things I see about the book now that people have told me is you can just pick it up and flip to a page and just start reading.
And there are some wonderful photos, too. Were people donating copies of pictures?
Yeah, I knew of people who took pictures back then. And I made some contacts with Jim Prince, who I was in a band in called Between Walls. He was a bass player, and he's a photographer in Chicago. He had a whole bunch of stuff, and I didn't even know he had taken so many pictures. And he gave me just about everything he had to pick from. And Guy Hoffman from the Oil Tasters, Haskell's, gave me a bunch of photos with my permission to use.
In the course of doing the book, did you reconnect with people that you thought you'd never see again?
Oh, yes. And it also spurred a reunion show of my band, Dark Facade. I think that was the same year that they did the Lest We Forget show. And that was great, getting together with everybody, although we had to plug in some players because some people couldn't make it. Lisa, our bass player, who's in the Amidots also, lives in Berlin, Germany. And the guitarist hadn't played guitar for so long that he didn't feel comfortable being on stage. So we got Jack Jurassic, who was in a band called Kafka back in the 80s, and he played guitar for us. I mean, just seeing these people again after 20 years or more was just phenomenal.
Years fell away.
Oh, yeah. And doing the interviews, too. Some of these people that I interviewed, I knew well, and some I really didn't know anything about them. But talking to them, we realized we had common ground. And
do you think there's more to explore in this scene? That does this book just kind of get the ball rolling, and then there's really more to do?
I think you could probably do a part two and take it into the 90s. A lot of the people who were in bands in the 80s didn't stop making music in 1990, and some of them did pretty well, and I think it could be pursued.
I was going to say, there's your next project, because to watch the evolution of what they did after they were doing this in the late 70s and early 80s would be really interesting musically, I would think.
It would be, yeah.
So yeah. Get writing.
Yeah. I'm actually writing a fictional book right now. I'm trying my hand at that, but
when you're done,
when I'm done.
Are you playing? Did this get you back into playing?
Yeah, actually it did. After the reunion show, my friend Kirk McFarland, who was in Einstein's Rice Boys and all different bands, and I got together, and he plays guitar and drums and keyboards. He's multi-talented. And we started just sitting down and writing songs, and he had some stuff that he had together already, and we're in the studio right now recording a CD.
So
which might come out this summer.
Very cool. So it's like, you know, punk take two.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Steve Nodine, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you and to read the book, The Cease Is Increase, An Oral History of Milwaukee's Punk and Alternative Scene. And I look forward to part two.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Bonnie, for having me here today. I enjoyed it.
Me too. Steve Nodine is the author of The Cease Is Increase, An Oral History of Milwaukee's Punk and Alternative Music Scene. We're going out with him and his band Dark Facade from an early 80s recording of their tune, Slave to Love. And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks, as always, for tuning in today. We're looking forward to having you join us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.